is by Cigna, that's our chief, Bridget, and Leo Bustad on animals that help people. I lost my hearing very suddenly, and we trained our dog, or we had a friend train our dog, to alert me to the smoke alarm, the alarm clock, the telephone, and the doorbell or a door knock. Bridget! 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 That's a girl. That's a girl. I said that we had a friend train her to do this. At first, Leo wanted to
look in her direction.
Leo wanted to get a hearing ear dog, and I said no. I didn't. I couldn't handle a second dog. Then he said, well, we'll send her to a friend who will train her in 2 or 3 months. And I said, no, she can't leave. I'm one of those difficult people. And so he found a friend who agreed to come to our home and see if she could train her. She is a dog trainer. She had never trained a hearing ear dog, but accepted it as a challenge to see if she could do it, and she did it. At first, we had her on a leash, and Terry would poke the smoke alarm with the broom handle, and then get real excited and pull Bridget to me, up on me. And then I would respond with a piece of liver, and then we would all run to the smoke alarm. That was the advice that the people in Massachusetts had given her. She consulted them in how to go about this.
It was a hearing ear dog center.
But then we modified that later. It was ridiculous, you know. There I was going to the smoke alarm and saying, that's where the noise came from, you know. So we changed that, and I went to a door. We have sliding doors in our bedroom. This was usually done when I was lying on the bed, though not always. Then she took the leash off of her and was able, but she coaxed her and to me. And then she kept saying, Cigna, get more excited. I tried. And the same kind of thing with the alarm clock. It's probably her most successful, the easiest one to train her to, because she liked to jump on the bed. The telephone was a little more difficult because it sometimes rang when Terry, our friend, was not there. And I had to have my liver ready and be someplace where Bridget could find me and so on. But we were able to do that too. The doorbell was a little more difficult. It's still a little bit of a problem. We have a big window by the door. And she likes to stand there at the window and bark at the visitor. And if she doesn't like their looks, if they have a uniform on or for some reason she's suspicious about them, she will stand there and bark instead of coming to get me. Oh, we're working on that. Some of you have asked me how I could bring her up on the boat where no animals are allowed. She has the same privileges as a seeing eye dog. She is a certified hearing ear dog. On her harness, if you'll notice, there's a little plate that identifies her as a hearing dog. They're trying to get this insignia standardized. We have on order a yellow collar and leash, which I think is more standard. The Massachusetts people, who are the ones who authorized our friend to test her dog and pass her or fail her? Did it through them. And so she is a registered alumna of the Massachusetts Hearing Ear Dog.
Correspondence course.
And I have an ID card that has the picture of the two of us on it. And on the back, it gives the legal privileges that a hearing ear dog has. Not in the back. And I have used that. We were traveling, very hot. We were in a city and walking around. I can't remember why we were walking around. Waiting to see somebody, I think. It was lunchtime and we went into this lunch place. I do not like to take her into a restaurant. She isn't trained as well as a seeing-eyed dog. She's, as you see, she's running around. She's not sitting here beside me. And I don't need her in a restaurant. But in this case, it was too hot. There was no place to leave her. And so I showed them my card, and they said, yes, you can bring her in.
And they were very gracious. They were very gracious about it.
Yeah. I read lips some. I don't do it as well as I wish I did. We have a friend here who reads lips, and that's why I'm trying to talk in that direction, hoping the rest of you will hear anyway. Do you have any questions? The dogs can be trained to other sounds. We chose these four. They can be trained to a baby crying, to a siren, for people who drive and are deaf. I have a little hearing. I can hear those sirens. They're close. Or a timer, anything you decide to train them for. And another reason we brought her up here is that there should be a strong bond between the person who is hard of hearing and the dog who is the helper. And if I put her in a kennel for a week, that would not be good. They do not like to put hearing aid dogs. Most hearing aid dogs are trained in special facilities, such as a seeing eye dogs, and they're given their training, and then the person comes and is trained with the dog, and then they go home. They're tested first. Now, Bridget did not pass the test completely. She failed two things, but I never did find out what the second thing was. One thing, she was afraid of a Kleenex tied on a string. That's one reason. She was very timid. That's one reason I didn't want to send her away for training. But Terry decided that she was a smart little dog and that she could train her anyway. And that was true. They do not like to put hearing ear dogs in a family where there are hearing people. Leo's gone a lot, so I figure I'm safe. But when he's there, it's a little confusing. When the phone rings, she comes and jumps on me, and I answer it and hand it to Leo, usually. We have an amplifier on it, but the calls are usually for him. Well, sometimes Bridget thinks that's ridiculous. So she comes and jumps on Leo. That's it.
So I'll enlarge and extend this a bit. Am I in the light good enough for you? Are there any others red lips here? If you want me to turn your way.
You have to talk into the microphone.
I think they can hear me well enough. I had worked with hearing handicap before this happened. And this happened now about 4 years ago on April the 14th. And I came home and walked into the kitchen 5 minutes late from 6:30. And I always usually come home. And I said something to the chief who was by the sink. And nothing happened. And I thought this unusual because she usually comes to attention. And so I spoke again. And nothing happened. So I went over to the sink and took her gently, as I always do, by the arm, or patted her somewhere, and she started to jump. And she says, I lost my hearing today. This is a terrible disability. I had worked with hearing handicap before, but I didn't realize how difficult it was. And the first thing I thought of was about 25 years before that, the chief and I were in some town, and we saw a blind man. And I says, I couldn't stand to lose my vision. And she says, I couldn't stand to lose my hearing. Well, I've talked to now many people, and hearing is worse for them. It would be worse to lose their hearing than their eyesight. I know a good friend of mine who's lost his eyesight at 9 and ran a chemical company. And I asked him about it, and he says, oh, losing your eye vision isn't that much of a handicap. But he says, I couldn't stand to lose my hearing. And I think Helen Keller said that too. But most people don't know how to deal with hearing handicapped people. Now, I'm ever grateful to our pastor, Craig Shirley, who was just left the Pullman Church. Within 24 hours after the chief lost her hearing, he was there to visit her. Anytime you have a loss, that's a tragic event, and it has a deleterious effect on you, psychologically, physically, and otherwise. And he recognized this and was there. When he preached,
His first sermon at our church when he preached, he came down and gave her a copy of his sermon before he preached it. And she probably got more out of the sermon than anybody else. One of the things, too, she said that, well, it's no use going to summer theater, which we had enjoyed. We have very good summer theater in Pullman, one of the cultural centers of the Northwest. And she says, no use going to that. And I says, we are going to it. And you're going to get the script. We're going to get the script for the play. We're going to sit up down front, where it's only 5 feet to the stage, and as long as it's a musical, because music for her is cacophony. And we'll see the play. And she enjoyed the play. And it's important that you stay in there, because if you don't have human contact, you get sort of dingy. Just like me. It's enough with one dingy guy in the house, other than Dingbat the dog. She doesn't like me to call her Dingbat, but she likes the dog likes that name better. I call him the way I see him. But now, she heard me. Now, she is a kind of dog that you wouldn't have picked. For one thing, she was 5 years old, you see? And there's a big investment in these. If you're going to buy a hearing dog today, it'll cost you $2,500. Well, you can go up. There's a new center up in Laconer on Pullen Be Damned Road. That's the real name of it. It's Pullen Be Damned Road by the Wallys. And I think they're, do you remember what the Wallys charge? Is it $2,000 for a dog? The Wallys up on Pullen Be Damned Road in Laconer?
Do I remember when they...
The cost. I think it's less than that, but there are many centers. The first center was in American Humane Society in Colorado. And how they got about it, there was a lady in Minnesota who had trained her dog to be a hearing dog, as I think yours dog or something. You can tell us about that in a little while. But, and she, her dog died. So she called up maybe a local TV station or something and said, I lost my hearing dog has died and I need another hearing dog. And they said, just like a lot of you, what's a hearing dog? Usually people start laughing. I mean, dogs can hear, you know, everybody knows that. And they didn't, they said, why don't you call the Humane Society? Well, the Humane Society said, well, maybe we should start a program. Well, it was bigger than they could handle. So the American Humane picked it up, and that's how I knew about hearing dogs, because I was on the follow-up of the first placement of a hearing dog in the Northwest with Mrs. Christensen at Gig Harbor. I think there's somebody here from Gig Harbor. And that was a great experience. I brought the chief over there at a time when she had her hearing, and it was an interesting day. We knocked at the door. Incidentally, this dog was trained for a bell on the door, to respond to a doorbell. And when I was a Battelle fellow in Seattle Center, they didn't have doorbells, so you had to knock. So we trained her to a knock then. And she responds rather well to a knock. But the American Humane went out of it, but several other people have now picked it up. They have a very good program in San Francisco, Humane Society. There's one in Jacksonville, Oregon. I told you about the one up here. And there's two or three in Massachusetts. And they're, pardon, Wisconsin. I don't have the list of all of them. But they're growing. And when you think of it, there's just really probably several million who could benefit by this. There are what, 60 million hearing handicapped, or maybe 18 million in the country, and I've seen what it does for the chief. But you see, the advantage is to have a small dog, because for one thing, and Dingbat likes this the best, you know, things are kind of quiet in Pullman at night, so it's usually perched for a takeoff at about 6:30 in the morning for a leap onto the chief, because and it enjoys that. And you see, we had to train her at 5. She was trained not to jump on beds. So I think she only got on them when we weren't there. And she was trained not to jump on people. Well, you see, it doesn't help to bark at a person that can't hear. So she's trained to jump on you and jump on beds. So it's ideal to get a small dog trained early. And usually a small dog, because they live longer. And with that investment, you see, they don't eat as much either. Now, in Australia, they are using the dogs that flunk out of guide dog programs, seeing eye dog programs, but that are still good dogs. But they're usually a larger dog. So they've gone to that, and they train them not to jump on the, you know, push the person over there. They train them to be more gentle so they don't come crashing down on you. Now, there's also a program now in England. When I was there in 1980 or 81, I talked to a couple of tigers. Well, one was a tigress, a lady Paul Wright, or Lady Babs Wright, who was very interested in this, and a fellow who has a best-selling book out, and he's coming out with another one, a good friend of mine named Bruce Fogel. He's written a book, Pets and Their People. Think about that. But and they have started a program that is really outstanding. And I was privileged there to be in London when they really announced this program and had Chum there and a couple who were going to be the recipients of this dog. And they had a big press conference at the opening of the British Small Animal Veterinary Association, which is the largest in Europe. And it was my privilege then to introduce the hearing dog thing. They recognized. You usually don't. I've appeared at quite a few news conferences and all, and nationally, internationally, and they're a tough bunch. They usually don't applaud. That's a given. And I told them about how our dogs served my wife and other dogs that I was familiar with. But I said, this is an unusual circumstance because here are the Chapmans, who are both hearing handicapped, and they run a school in Devon for hearing disturbed children, you see. So you can imagine the impact that dog is going to have. And when I finished, there was an applause, because of the emotion and the recognition of the significance of this. And then I was invited to quite a few news conferences, and one of the more interesting ones was London Broadcasting Company, and my interviewee was Carol Thatcher. Her mother is well-placed, or tenuously well-placed in the United Kingdom. She is Carol is a correspondent, first in Australia and then there, although she has no more sense of humor than her mother. I did loosen her up a bit, but she had done her homework, and she asked the right questions. And after the interview, there was a talkback show. And one of the people, all the people that called in were handicapped people. And this one lady was losing her hearing, so she was training her dog to be a hearing dog. Another lady called in, she was blind. And she told me about her seeing eye budgie. A budgerigar, an Australian parrot. Yeah, he was, you know. And this was a very important companion to her. And she told me about some of its feats. She says, like today, I had forgotten that I had left the front door open. And I was going out the front door, and just before I got there, my budgie, who I usually let outside, I mean, fly around, not in the cage, but in the house, and the budgie was on my shoulder, and just before I was to hit the door, the budgie flew off and flew into my face and stopped me. And she says, the budgie is trained to a sandbox, I mean, to a kind of a litter box. And I took that with a grain of salt, because if you're blind, you don't know where it is anyway. Probably don't care. But this introduces the whole area of helping animals, animals helping people, which is something I've been involved in now for 10 years, and especially people who are disadvantaged. And I'm on a one-man campaign, sometimes in embarrassing situations for the wife, because I don't like to see handicapped people hassled. And I'll give you an illustration of this, because the ferry system of this state is going to get a letter from me very soon, along with a few senators and probably the governor. We were going out to San Juan Islands on the ferry. And the same thing happened last year. This year we came to the ferry dock, and a big one going to, over to, from Laconer to Friday Harbor. And there's a big sign up that says, of course, no dogs allowed in the quarters. You know. Well, how did a person go about getting on the ferry? You know? And so the chief stayed outside. I went in to the lady who was womaning the... I watched that. And she was a very sensitive person. I told her the situation. She said, no problem. Come right in here, you can go on, we understand this. So we go on up and get ready to go on, and here the fellow that's gonna check us on, well, it's too early yet. Then we said, all right, come on in. You gotta take that dog down into the hold. Well, that dog isn't supposed to go into the hold, huh? And on the ferry ride, and one of the fellows, one of the supervisors, sent another fellow over saying, you got to take that dog down into the hold. And so I give him my 5-minute talk about this, and to the embarrassment of my wife, but to their education. And I don't think they'll ever do that again to any handicapped person. They're hassling them, you see. And she has every right to have that dog there, with as all the privileges, and they are to accompany them, you see. And I told them that as far as signs on the door, there shouldn't be no dogs, pets allowed. It should, they can say no pets except helping animals, you see. And that gets them off the hook, because I know their problem. You know, and then everybody's taking their juvenile delinquent animals on there, and they're biting the kids and eating the popcorn and depositing used dog food all over the premises. I understand that. But we got to become more sensitive to this and quit hassling these people. They got enough problems without getting hassled by us. We're here to help them. Now, and we have to extend this to other animals. I can give you a lot of examples of this, and maybe just a few will help you, because I'm going to be discussing more of this in a couple of days. And but I'll give you some examples of how these animals do pick up on these things, and we're not restricting it only to dogs. I got a call one day from a group in Northern California, or north of San Francisco, who have a real winning program on helping animals, and they asked me if they could train a cat to be a hearing cat. Well, I kind of think you can if you pick the right cat, because a lady told me that whenever she went to the phone, and she was a cat person, and there are such people, and they're very interesting. But all four of her cats would beat her to the phone. Now, I kind of figured out why, because you know, you get on the phone, you're talking, and then you're petting the cats, aren't they? And you do, so you pet the cats, and that's a reward. But I know another case where this dog and cat were very good friends. And the dog always answered the door and took great pride in answering the door. And then he lost his hearing, as many dogs do. And so he wasn't able to answer the door. But the cat picked up on this and would give the dog the signal when everybody was out there, so he could then he could start barking. So it was a hearing cat. I'll probably give you only one example, and we're trying to extend this now to make everybody aware not only of guide dogs, which most people accept, and hearing dogs, but other helping dogs. And I'll give you a couple of examples of this. In our own hometown. Well, I should point out too that this dog is unique. To start training a dog at 5, and we got it at 3, and it had been raised very badly, it had not been treated well. You start younger. There are hearing dog centers, but there's a lot of training that can be done by the person, as we have shown you. And we'll have another demonstration probably before we quit here, because somebody loaned me their alarm here, and we'll see if it works. I hope the dog jumps up on him so he can enjoy that. But we have a girl that I employed part-time, and she has juvenile arthritis. And she types quite accurately, not too fast, but she does it with her knuckles. And she can barely walk and hard upstairs. It's really pathetic. And one of a student I told you about, some of you before, who had a very bad life, she's very into animals, and she, in fact, mourned her dog more than her mother when they died. But she helped this girl, and this girl is juvenile arthritic, Sharon, has trouble picking things up and fetching things, and so she trained her dog Sport and gave it to her to do this, you see. And it's a very great comfort to her. And there's a case where that dog should go with her, you see. But there's nothing authorized to do that in many places, you see. And they can hassle her about it. Or take, at Puyallup, there's a fellow named Bert Push, who's in charge of the Independent Living Center. Now, Bert Push is not built like you and me. He has only one digit on this hand, and it's quite a large one. He has one long digit on this hand and two little short ones. So he has trouble picking things up. He shuffles when he walks. He's a little short guy, He shuffles when he walks. He can't walk very far. And when he falls, he has trouble getting up. He likes to go camping, but he can't carry a pack. If the phone rings, it takes him about 10 rings to get to the phone. And if it's behind if he has to go through a sliding door, he has trouble with a sliding door. Well, the person who I'll tell you about in my slideshow, who we've tried to help out, and who's psychologically traumatized for life due to a very bad situation. She was incarcerated 35 times in 14 different institutions. So she has sort of a PhD in prisons. And she's present in Italy. But we talked a lot about this, and we've tried to help her out. She can train a dog to do anything. In fact, dogs are what saved her life. She was a runaway at 13. And we talked a lot about helping out prisoners, since I had also been in prison. And she came up with an idea one day. She said, we'll go out to Gig Harbor, which is a prison for women. It's a maximum security prison for women. As prisons go, it's a pretty well-managed prison. And I knew we might have a chance of getting in there, because Sue Clark, the superintendent, has a basset hound. And you can't be all bad if you've got a basset hound. I contacted her and also the officials in our state capital. And we sold them on a pilot study. And we said we have the first case. The proposal was that Kathy, who is this girl I told you about, would take two of the best trainers she knew and go to the prison and train prisoners to train animals for handicapped people. And the first patient, then the first recipient was going to be Bert Push, because he also wanted a companion. So we introduced Bert to Sue, another Sue, who's a lifer. That means she's committed something rather bad. But she's a hail person, well met. I've had lunches with Sue inside the prison. And so she knew what she had to train for. And I was there, one of the more memorable days of my life, on the day that the dog was transferred to Bert. And they had the demonstration. They threw down a dime. It says, Glory Fetch. Glory was the name of the Australian shepherd she had trained. And then she said, Glory come stay. And she was like the rock of Gibraltar. I mean, he could crawl up on her and get upright. If the phone rang, she could bring the phone to him in two rings. She also opens sliding doors fast. She also carries a pack. She also pulls his wheelchair. She rides at his feet in airplanes and has also been to the White House. That's in the other Washington. And a very great companion to him. And Sue choked up when she turned the dog over to Bert. And contract killers usually don't choke up. She killed for hire. Her husband was also a killer. He's out. She may get out in 14 years or so. Now, last I heard, she's trained another dog for another girl who had a whole array of seizures which were life-threatening. She was 14 years old, and you always had to be there. The parents had to watch her all the time. So they brought her out to the prison, and they trained this dog, this German Shepherd, or Angie. I always remember dogs' names, but I can't come up with that dog's name right now. And this dog can detect seizures before the girl even knows she's getting it. They have a great sensitivity to this. And the parents maintain she saved her life at least twice. And they also observed that her number of seizures have diminished. We know now that the presence of an animal, pleasant animal usually, to pet it, it probably reduces the blood pressure of the animal, but also the person. To some, even just seeing the presence of the animal, or even a fish tank, it reduces the anxiety level and your blood pressure. Physiological changes also. And you can imagine what this does for the prisoner. For some of these prisoners, this is probably the first creature that ever accepted them, because they don't know their record, you see. The only thing that gave them unconditional life, love. And they're also paying off a debt to humanity. And this girl, this 14-year-old, is in communication, a pen pal now, to this prisoner, probably up to twice a week. This has to have an effect on them. Now this is, now I'll be going to Alaska next week, my wife and I, and putting on a show. The chief and the dog are quite famous, really. They've been on newspapers and television across the country. And last January, she was on all three television stations in El Paso, and on the 6 o'clock and 10 o'clock news, and it was fun. We got a lot of response to this, and including some old friends of ours here from Holden, who happened to be in New Mexico, and they saw the whole thing on television and wrote to the chief. They were traveling through there, so that it's a fun thing to do. And I think very important for both of them and for an understanding of this. Now, I'm going to give you a lot of other cases of helping animals, but my plea is tonight to recognize these problems of these exceptional people that need our help to help, so they can help themselves. And to have a recognition of this, but also recognizing the great capacity of an animal. We haven't really utilized them. We usually downgrade their abilities. They can do a lot of things that we can't do. They've gone through more generations than we have in development. And there's great potential there, but we must not misuse it. We must respect them and have reverence for them, and not to mistreat them or to take advantage of them. But if you notice our dog, I think a much richer life since she's been doing this work than before. It's a much more exciting life for her. Although she doesn't watch her raves on TV, she sure enjoys parties. So that's an important part of this, and I'll have more to say about this Thursday. But now I want to leave this open now for others to tell about the heroics of animals and how they think. Because I think animals think, and I talked to a very wise man a few months ago when I was in Chicago. And I asked him about this, and he said, those who think that animals don't think, don't think. So now I want to hear from you about your animals, and maybe correct or modify some of the things I said.
I had three dogs, a husky, a chihuahua, and a what you see is what you get, period. And
we call them cocker scandals.
Yeah. And they're not formally trained as hearing ear dogs, but if the doorbell will ring or the phone will ring, well, if the doorbell rings and if I'm in bed, all three of them will jump on top of me at the same time. Actually, the husky just died, so that's a real sad loss. But the other two will jump on the bed at the same time. They will come up if the, wherever I am, if the doorbell rings, if the phone rings, I have a teletype, and they will, there are several telephones in the house, but there's only one teletype, and the dogs will both go in there.
Into that?
To that room, and then come to get me.
Yes.
They don't do anything with the smoke alarm, because we've not done anything about that.
You might want to do that. And it can, this dog will do anything for boiled liver. And a reward system.
But they're very good, and it just sort of happened automatically. I mean, they just sort of know that that's what they're supposed to do.
They'll pick up on it.
Immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm reminded of a girl, I'll show you pictures of some of these things in a few days. I'm reminded of this girl, Carol Antoinette Peacock, did her PhD at Boston College. She's an expert on juvenile delinquents. And for her thesis, she got permission to interview in depth 24 juvenile delinquents who were in for very serious offenses. And she got to interview them before their hearing. And she did 12 of them with her dog and 12 without her dog. And the results of this were very remarkable differences. Of course, she was a different person in the presence of her dog. But the response was fantastic. What the information she got with her dog present was altogether different and far richer. For example, the critical comments from in the absence of her dog were 280 compared with 40 with her dog present. And they'd volunteer things in the presence of this dog. But the point I was going to make was that for defense of thesis, in her oral defense of thesis, she appealed to her committee to permit her dog to be present since it was part of the thesis. And so the dog, now this dog isn't exactly, I mean, its IQ is above detection, but not much. I mean, it is not a bright dog. It's kind of laid back. It's kind of a mutt. But for her defensive thesis, that dog paced back and forth for the entire examination. Because it detected in her, you see, it read her.
I think the best thing the dogs and I have going for us is that they will get me up at 5:30 in the morning on the button without anyone having trained them if I feed them at 5 o'clock at night on the button.
So they'll pick up on a lot of things like this, surprisingly. Their vocabulary, on some dogs, their vocabulary is probably 50 or 60 words. Any other shaggy dog stories? Yes?
I just read a comic by that Gurdjieff made to one of his pupils one time that was real interesting, and that was, he said you should always be very kind to dogs and horses. He said they want to be human. He said you can look in their eyes and see their desire to be human. So he said dogs and horses always be very kind.
Yeah, I'll add pigs to that, and I'll make the point in a few days to convince you also, probably even pigs more so.
We have a neighbor in our condominium. She has a little black poodle, and it'll go to the front door because we have two rings at the front door. And if it's at the back door, it's one ring, and she heads for the door or the telephone. She'll head for that. And lets Jessie know. And she sleeps on Jessie's bed, so when she barks and leaves the bed, well, Jessie follows her. And she knows when they're to go out walking and ask to get out. And she understands she'll run and get many toys by name. She's a wonderful companion. But
yeah,
she's not allowed her to rest home.
Yeah, you bring up a very important thing that we are working on in the Delta Society nationally, and we have legislation through now, at least on HUD housing, And we get letters all the time in the Delta office from some person like this that say, we are going to now enforce the no pet rule. Taking away from these people, these individuals, for some of them, the only thing that they got left in life that needs them, that gives them unconditional love, makes no judgments, are forgiving, gives them security, gives them something to touch, helps organize their life, and gives them security. And if it's a dog, it requires them to exercise. And there's no pill that'll do that for you today. And that's what they're going to take away from them. So we have, there are lawyers who are working on this, helping us. And we are working on the regulations. Reagan signed the bill, President Reagan signed the bill a year ago last fall, that requires them to allow them to have animals in nursing homes, convalescent homes, or homes for the aged and the handicapped, if it's government funded. Yet a lot of these are not permitting it, you see. They're giving them a bad time, or putting up the barriers on keeping them so high that you got to be a millionaire to do it, you see. So we have a lot of that to wrestle with, and we are wrestling with it.
They just opened up 15 of the 16 public housing high-rises to animals in St. Paul during the last 6 months. The only regulation they have is that animals must use one elevator. I mean, people with animals, and one must be kept only for humans.
Yeah, my associates have written a guideline for placement of animals in nursing homes and convalescent homes. And I should say that Minnesota can be proud, not only of Lake Wobegon, but also they are among the pioneers in recognizing the value of animals. In fact, I think they were one of the first states to permit animals in nursing homes. Of course, they were really permitting them before. They did a survey, a friend of mine named Bob Anderson at the University of Minnesota, who has a center there. They did a survey and found out that I think over half the nursing home and convalescent home at a time when they really weren't supposed to have them, had them. You see, they were closet animals. When I started in this business about 10 years ago, and telling about the greatness of this, and people afterwards would come up and whisper to me they had animals in this place and that place. You know, they even had them in veterans' hospitals, you know. Now they announce it from way back in the room, see, because it's now acceptable in some quarters. In fact, in veterans' hospitals, when I was in Vancouver, somebody was here from Vancouver watching, many years ago they invited me down there to talk and show me their cats in their extended care ward, and they've done research on it now, sponsored research on animals, and they allow, of course. In fact, I think they might furnish a hearing handicapped or a blind person a helping dog. So we are. It takes time, but we're making progress. Yes.
Speaking of rest homes,
can you move over so she can see you? She reads lips.
Speaking of rest homes, we had an incident this summer where the children brought their animals to visit at Bethany Manor, which is a rest home in Story City. And this one boy was just leaving with his dog and a fellow who sat in a wheelchair who had not spoken since he'd had his stroke asked if he could pet his dog again. And that was the first audible words he had spoken.
Yeah, there's now a growing volume of data to indicate that in speech therapy, but also autistics and aphasics, that the presence of a dog will break them out of it. And I'll be giving some examples of that. But just to remind you of a letter I got one day a while back, it was a very sad letter. It was the daughter of this lady, and she said, my mother was born in Europe and learned German, but when she came to this country, she only spoke English. And And in recent years, and she described the symptoms, which were those of Alzheimer's. And she reverted to German. And one day, down the street, neighbors down the street had what kind of dog did I mention? A Basset, yeah. It was a Basset hound named Audrey. And Audrey got into the house, and she came over to her mother. And the mother saw the dog, leaned down, and started to pet it and say, "Nice puppy, are you hungry?" In perfect English. The first time in 2 years she'd spoken in English and made any sense. And the daughter went on to say, she says, the only time that she ever spoke English was in the presence of the dog. And she says, "I guess I should have gotten her a dog. But she's dead now. And she should have." And I have a story here on now some research being done with in speech therapy and using animals. One dog was named Shamrock, I think, and this dog was well trained and would do tricks and things, and it helped them in the training in their language arts, and it was effective. In Arizona, at Albuquerque, there's a lady who's a speech therapist, uses horseback riding with horses, and with very good effect. Yes?
I have a dear friend who teaches at a bilingual one in Glendale, California. It was a college many years ago, and her dog is bilingual. And it's amazing how dog is.
Yeah, they'll pick up on it. And we've had examples of some bad examples where they were only monolingual in a foreign language, you see, and the person had trained them in a foreign language, and then they got into trouble. And then there were only Anglos around, and they couldn't make the dog understand anything, you see, and it became a real problem. So it's a good point. We got to make them bilingual. And they can. Some even understand Norwegian. Especially Norwegian elk hounds. I said even some Norwegian, some of them understand Norwegian. Anything else? I think we've used up our... No, we were going to... Are you... Let's try. She needs to wake up anyway. Can you... Here, lay down. Let's see if she's working on the alarm clock. She hasn't been working on the alarm clock lately. You want your coat down too? Of course, now if the alarm doesn't ring, bets are off. She knows something's up. Get up there. Come on, yeah. At home, she takes an 8-foot leap. And it brings out another important point. When we went out to Miss Christensen on the post, on the test after she'd had her dog for a little while, I mentioned the dog knew we were at the door and went and got her. We came in and we had a good visit with Mrs. Christensen. This is the first placement of a hearing dog here in the Northwest. And then we took her out in her bed, and the lady that was testing her had a tape recorder. And she played a smoke alarm while she was on her bed. And the dog, of course, jumped up on her and got her out of bed, and then came running out of the living room where I was and jumped on me. I mean, and the person with me. I mean, she was going to clear the house. And that dog's name's Ranger. And then she had a tape recording of the telephone. But it was a lousy tape recording. And the dog looked at the tape recorder and kind of squinted its eyes, and then looked up at the phone, and then Sue says, "Who's kidding who?" Didn't respond, you see. And then we asked her if she had any other problems. And she says, "Yes, it doesn't wake me up with the alarm." Well, we went out and got an alarm, and it was a buzzer, or else the bell had fallen off. And the dog had been trained to a bell, you see. And I think it was Pavlov that showed in his training of his dog that a dog could differentiate between C sharp and C flat. And so it was not responding to that. I was surprised that this dog tonight, it's not used to this kind of a buzzer. It's more bell type. This sounded more like a buzzer, didn't it? But she knew she had a treat, see. She watched her when she left her house. She had treats with her, and she knew she was going to be rewarded. There's nothing she likes better. And that's what goofs her up. Because she feeds her at 5:30. And if she's eating, all bets are off. I mean, even the paper boy out there, out front. And she also lets her know when the paper boy in the mail lines there. But the food comes first. And she really has a dilemma. I give her, I usually give her 10 pieces of food. My wife only gives her 7 in the morning after she goes outside. And if she's still eating those 10 and her alarm goes off, she is very distressed. So she sort of gobbles faster and really takes off. She usually makes a 12-foot leap. She's very fast. She is now 8 years old. She'll be 8 years old now. Naru the day leaves us. Thank you very much for your attention.